Hi, Jiu-Jitsu fans and fighters alike. This is your host and editor-in-chief. Welcome to Jiu-JitsuSweep.com Radio. This week's show, we will be speaking about BJJ and injuries, BJJ and scheduling, and all-around BJJ talk. My guest this week is Jiu-Jitsu Blue Belt Dr. Brett White, and we will be talking about ringworm, staph, and ways to prevent injuries and infections. Real quickly before we start, fight fans, we hope you enjoyed this weekend's BJJ events, and we look forward to more events to come. We here at Jiu-JitsuSweep.com are proud to bring you all things Jiu-Jitsu. And don't forget to visit our sponsors for continued support of Jiu-JitsuSweep.com. If you have any show suggestions, feel free to send us an email at Jiu-JitsuSweep@gmail.com, and we will take your suggestions into consideration for a future show. So without further ado, fight fans, let's get into our segment titled BJJ and Injuries. We hope you enjoy the show. Some of the reasons that we have seen for not attending BJJ class on any given day may include skin infections, sickness, and more commonly, injuries due to the nature of our sport. Brett, what can you tell us about injuries we see in BJJ?
As far as injuries that we see oftentimes in BJJ class that would kind of keep you from being able to attend, be such injuries such as shoulder injuries or rotator cuff injuries.
Well, I know you've had shoulder.
With my shoulder early in training, unfortunately, going a million miles an hour with someone else that equally didn't have much technique and going a million miles an hour, you end up in a bad position, and unfortunately I was thrown and didn't know how to land right and probably wasn't thrown the best way anyway. And with landing on my arm, well, I was actually trying to pass a scissor sweep. And the way that the particular person had hold of my gi sleeve and my gi, he actually had my arm straight out to the side, so trying to pull it across and pushing over with the legs to get the sweep almost pulled me. It ended up being almost more of a throw than a sweep. And because he had control of my sleeve, my arm only had so many ways to go.
Right.
And when I came down with full force going forward, it actually dislocated my shoulder. And the head of the humerus ended up in a place that it shouldn't be. It was actually up underneath the muscles of my chest, which prevented me from being able to even get my elbow down to my side.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people equate these shoulder dislocations with what you see on, you know, Sunday afternoon watching football, and you see these guys running to the sideline with their elbow tucked against their ribs, and they're kind of hobbling off, leaning to that side. And in my case, I had to grab a hold of my wrist and hold my arm up because my elbow wouldn't come down. And it was pretty miserable until they actually relocated my shoulder at the hospital. Now, once they relocated it at the hospital, it felt about 85% better just right there.
See, I didn't even know about that situation. I didn't know that's what happened. I just knew that you had a shoulder injury.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing, and it kept me out of training for quite some time. And matter of fact, at that point, I was probably about 40, 41 years old. Thought, man, maybe it's about time for me to grow up.
Right.
Do I really need this type of thing? And I need my arms at work, and so I kind of thought maybe it'd be best to find another outing. Another interest that was not likely to get me to dislocate my shoulder again. And so I was out for about a year and a half, at which point my two boys started BJJ. And, of course, as soon as they started training, and I kind of walked in and got the smell of the gym and the feel of the mat under my feet again, started getting that mat fever, and I thought, boy, I really want to get back out here and train. So I did.
It is addicting when you walk into the gym. When you've been gone for a while, it's kind of like that old saying that absence makes the heart grow fonder. So
absolutely.
The longer you are away from it, and you do come back, it's like,
Well, I thought I'd be able to live vicariously through my boys, but like I said, once I got in there and wanted to get back out there and roll a little bit. And at that point, I was a little disappointed because I started seeing some of the guys that that I had trained with before. And matter of fact, there was one guy coming in who, the night of my shoulder injury, was his second night to train.
Wow.
And he walked in, and he then had a blue belt.
Wow.
And I was thinking,
yeah,
I want one of those.
Yeah. I've been
so, yeah. So that kind of got me refocused and reinterested in getting back to training.
So how do you feel about, I know you talked about being 40 at the time of your shoulder injury. How do you feel about training at a, I don't want to say older age, not so young age? Because I see a lot of the guys and the girls that train at our school are high school kids and it
college age kids.
Yeah, sure. And maybe it's just me or maybe it's just because I'm getting older, but it just seems to me that they've got more intensity and more drive. How do you feel about training over the age of, say, 30 or 40?
Well, I think it's great, and I think there's a lot of things that we can get out of it. You know, it depends on what your reasons for training are. And mine were more for recreation, and
right.
I, at this point, I had no desire in actual competing.
Right.
But I thought it was something that my boys and I could do, and we have some mats in our garage, and from time to time we can come out and we can work through some techniques, and it's just something fun I can do with my sons. But I also like it from a standpoint of exercise. I love the techniques,
right,
and things like that. And frankly, rolling's fun. But I think as someone that's past the age of 30 or so, it's a good idea to train smarter and not harder.
Right.
But that's something I need to continually try to convince myself of.
Right.
Sometimes we still think we're 18, but our bodies let us know it that night and the next day that we do need to be smarter about it.
Yeah. It does remind you that you're not 18 anymore, myself included. I mean, it's almost you can't make an omelet without cracking a few eggs. I mean, it's one of them things that's unavoidable completely. Where just because of the nature of the sport, it goes back to going 100 miles an hour. If you're constantly doing that, you got a higher risk of injury.
Definitely.
I'm coming off of a meniscus tear, my second one. And it goes back to the other issues of injuries in BJJ. Obviously, you want to train, but I don't necessarily think that people should train through an injury just because the risk of damage, long-term damage. My philosophy is that you should probably heal yourself to adequate amount of time to where you can always go back 1-2 months later and train again the way you'd like to, instead of continuously going to train in class and having that pain just always reoccurring, where it just becomes miserable and it's not fun anymore.
Well, yeah, and I think that's something that the thing that should be considered is just because with the nature of BJJ and these type of grappling arts, there's going to be a lot of times that you're going to have some aches and pains. There's certain things, that's a virtual guarantee that something's going to hurt at pretty much all the time.
Right.
But you still can train with certain injuries.
Depending on the level of pain?
Not necessarily. I think depending on the level of pain that you're willing to put up with, provided that particular injury isn't unstable or at a higher possibility of being re-injured or aggravated. Say, for instance, you hurt your shoulder or your knee. That doesn't mean perhaps you can't go in and roll 100%, but maybe you can go in and do some drilling still, or you could still go in and do some techniques and just work around those types of issues so you can still get some work in. But there are times that there's you just shouldn't be on the mat.
Right. I think that some of the reasons why you shouldn't be on the mat, obviously if you're getting arm broken or hyperextending elbow, those are things that may affect your quality of life outside of the gym. Obviously, you don't want to go home with injuries where you're either hobbling around or you can't get out of bed or you can't even go to work and make a living.
Well, that's right. And I think that some of the people that work out in the gyms, and particularly where we've trained before, you have some guys that come in and out of there that actually do want to make a living as a fighter. Some of those guys will probably put up with a lot more than you or I will. But if BJJ or mixed martial arts are not going to be your main breadwinning activity,
right,
then you have to think about it in a smarter way and make sure that you're not going to take away what's going to put, you know, food on your
right.
table.
Right. I think a lot of people have gone through that. You know, myself included, I think twice about training through injuries just because the quality of life goes down outside of the gym.
Sure.
Obviously, there's some level of pain that I can tolerate where I can say, okay, well, you know, I got a ligament in my arm that's kind of hurting. Let me put a brace on it. I'll deal with it later. I'll ice it when I get home. But yeah, I mean, you don't want to train through an injury and just make it worse.
That's right.
Because then you're out for a longer time and then you can't do other activities that you would normally do at home with family. As far as like other reasons, what are your thoughts on skin infections?
Skin infections are a big problem, especially in the grappling arts, obviously with wrestling and in submission grappling and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. There's several different skin afflictions that we do tend to run into, ringworm being one of the big ones. Contrary to what a lot of people believe, it's not actually a worm. Oftentimes it is kind of circular in nature when you see this little rash. It's actually caused by a fungus, and the fungus is very similar to the type of fungus that you would have with athlete's foot or jock itch. And this fungus likes warm, moist places on the skin. Very contagious, but usually not that severe.
Okay.
It usually can be treated with, you know, over-the-counter creams without any problem. Where you run into trouble is when, you know, maybe with scratching and whatever else, you know, that breaks open, and then you're opening yourself up for some type of infection, and that'd be more of an issue. But the problem with this is it is contagious, and so if you're getting that skin-to-skin contact, or if you have a dirty gi that you haven't washed in a while, and that gets infected with this fungus, and you're grappling, now that can be an issue. Sharing towels, sharing training gear, whether it be headgear, gloves, shin guards, things like that, these are problems. So those are the types of things that you can have problems with ringworm, and really easy to prevent getting that. Another issue with skin infections would be staph infections. That can be quite a bit more of a problem and can be more severe. Staph infections can range from kind of just mild infections that'll kind of go away to very severe problems. The staph infections, it's named after the Staphylococcus aureus, which is a bacterial infection. And this is a bacteria that's actually normally found in your nose and on your skin. But now when you're out there and you're getting that skin-to-skin contact and you know, the sweat pores open up, or you have little nicks and cuts or abrasions, and that allows that bacteria in and eventually wears down your body's defenses, then that's when it becomes a problem. You can get these staph infections. They can progress into more severe things like cellulitis or impetigo, and these are things that are absolute contraindications to getting out there on the mat and doing more rolling. You need to take care of these things. You need to go to your doctor or dermatologist and take care of those things.
Now, how would somebody know if they have staph infection?
Well, usually the staph infection, they tend to get these little red, sometimes boils or little pustules, and they tend to be very red, irritated, often painful, sometimes itching. And these are areas that when you find these on your scalp or on your body, a lot of times on your face, you need to go have that checked out and make sure. Because once again, these are also very contagious, and that tends to be a problem. With as much as people tend to sweat, it gets on the mat, and then other people are there. It's the skin to skin, the skin to mat, things like that. So that's that needs to be followed up with, and usually they're treated with antibiotics. Now, the problem that's come out over the last several years that they've come across these things called MRSA and VRSA. MRSA is a methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is basically what they call a superbug. And what it is it's that same Staphylococcus aureus bacteria but it has become resistant to a lot of the antibiotics that we like to use, and that's a problem.
Wow.
That then can cause a much worse skin infection to, at times, even death. And so that is very difficult to treat. So with those types of issues, they typically use a different type of pharmaceutical to treat that, or different type of antibiotic. And now we have this another little superbug, if you will, called Versa, which is a vancomycin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. And that is just a whole other spectrum of antibiotics that now this bacteria is resistant towards. So more difficult to treat. So, you know, we feel like kind of the ounce of prevention type of idea is a good way to go.
Wow.
Best to prevent these things.
So how do you feel about athlete's foot?
Well, athlete's foot, it kind of goes back to the ringworm issue. It's a fungal infection, and it likes those warm, moist places. And once again, if you use proper hygiene, proper mat hygiene, things like that, you can, you know, really decrease your risk of having these issues. Make sure, you know, beforehand your body's clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people come straight from work and go to train, and unfortunately, you know, not all gyms have showers, so they couldn't shower right before they go out on the mat. But a lot of these schools now, you'll see Purell at the door, and that can work as well. But you want to make sure your body is clean, and then you need to make sure your equipment's clean. Wash the gi. Make sure the gis are washed. Your rash guards are washed. Any type of clothing or equipment, you need to get those and keep those clean. For one, so you don't get these type of skin afflictions, but two, you don't need to wipe out your school with a big, you know, ringworm and staph epidemic.
It also goes back to things that are out of your control. You were talking about mats. I mean,
yeah.
How do we know that the school is keeping the mats clean? Is there any way to look into that? Or?
Well, you know, that's something you would obviously talk to the people that run your particular school. I know the school where I do, the gym where I train, they wipe down the mats with a bleach solution at least twice a day. Usually in the morning, first thing, they mop those mats down with a bleach solution. And in between classes when they can, oftentimes you'll get to a point of the day where they're just back-to-back-to-back classes. But then afterwards and at the end of the day, they'll wipe them down with a bleach solution as well. And so that helps, and everyone's gym should be doing that. It would be worth it to make sure that's happening.
I mean, we don't really show up to train to get infections. Obviously, we go there to train to sharpen our technique and to be able to roll with other students that go to the school. Definitely, if we can all play our part, wash our gis, wash our equipment, and bleach. I know some of the guys that like to wear blue gis and you know, colored gis, that they might not want to use a bleach.
They do have a type of bleach that you can use with colors as well.
Okay.
And there are things you can do. I don't think it's quite as concentrated as the bleach you'd use on your white gi, but there are ways to, you know, to kill the mat critters.
Now, is it important to have more than one gi?
You know, I like having more than one gi, particularly if you're training more than one night a week. It's kind of nice to be able to have that one gi. You know, oftentimes you don't want to wash your gi and then throw your gi in the dryer because, you know, then that may end up being about the size of a kid's gi afterwards. It's really hard to, even when they tell you pre-shrunk, that's not always the case. Usually with my gis, I'll wash them and then I'll air dry them. So that gi isn't always dry by the time you get to that next class. Now, with some of the younger people that train at the gyms, you know, maybe they don't have enough funds to buy a gi for every day of the week.
Sure.
So the best thing they can do is then just make sure they keep their gi clean. And I know that we've all been around that one person that that gets overzealous with training, and they train, you know, 5-6 days a week, and we all know that gi doesn't get washed, and we always not always our favorite people to roll with,
right?
Because you don't want to get trapped in their gi.
skin-to-skin contact, and they already have, they may or may not have ringworm or staph on their gi, but yet we don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things that hygiene plays a very, very big role in attending class, and I think that's some of the other reasons why some people shouldn't attend class if their gi is not clean.
That's right.
I think that they shouldn't show up, or maybe they show up and not participate in live rolling. What about other people that show up and train with a cold or the flu?
Well, that's something that that tends to bother me as well. You know, when I go to train, it's tough to make sure that you stay healthy and you're getting your proper nutrition, your proper rest, and you're staying safe. But then if somebody else comes onto the mat and they have some type of illness, a cold or flu or whatnot, and, you know, this is, BJJ is a very close contact sport. And, you know, when you have someone that's hacking and coughing off the mat, and then you're rolling with them, and you're being exposed. And with the amount of sweating that's occurred and tired and fatiguing as BJJ can become, if you have some really rigorous training sessions, your immune system may get lowered. And maybe most of the time you could fight whatever they're trying to give you, but your immune system finally wears down, and now you're the one that's sick. And so I would prefer that, you know, particularly when people come in, they have a cold and a flu, take a day off. And that's tough for some of these people to do. They think, some of the younger individuals particularly think it's a sign of weakness to take any day off for anything. And you know, once again, you want to look out for your best interests, but you also need to not be quite as selfish. You need to appreciate the fact that, once again, you want to keep your teammates,
sure,
safe and healthy as well. It's not going to do you any good if you end up being the only one back out on the mat, because everybody else is out with your cold.
Right. The only one that shows up to train is you, and there's nobody else there, then it kind of defeats the whole purpose. Also, other reasons other than injury to not show up to train in class. I get a lot of people saying that they work long hours or they work too many hours and they're too tired to show up to train. I know schedule does interfere, but is there any way around that? Couldn't we have academies like have instructors or training during the day for people who...
Well, I think one of the things I like to do is check out various schools and gyms in various cities. If I go to visit a city, and I'm always kind of curious about how they run their gyms and their schools, so I go on their websites every so often, look at their hours, and I'm finding that more and more a lot of the schools are offering classes at various times of the day, you know, for BJJ and some of the other things that they offer. And so, you know, that's helpful if you're training at a place that where they have multiple options for you. But but ultimately, you have to look at it realistically. You know, work has to be the ultimate priority,
right.
You can't jeopardize your job because you want to train. So maybe what you need to do is find a place that's going to accommodate your particular work schedule, if that's what's important.
Now, I've also seen a few schools, there are not very many, but I have seen some schools that have instruction on Saturday. That's kind of one of the concepts that's starting to grow. And like I said, when I've done research on schools, I've seen maybe one BJJ class on a Saturday in the afternoon. I think the schedule, those kinds of schedules do help for people who might have the weekends off who would want to spend their Saturday afternoon training or rolling.
Yeah, I think so. And oftentimes, if a school or a gym does not offer an organized BJJ class on the Saturdays, most of the time they at least have some open mat hours. And although that may not fit everybody's needs, at least you can get in there and get some work done. If you can, particularly if you can find some partners that you can get in there and do some drilling with or some rolling. That is helpful.
Yeah, I think that having an unstructured open mat, it's too unreliable.
I agree.
Because of conflicting schedules, where if you were to have a Saturday schedule where maybe one of the part-time instructors will show up for an hour and give instruction and then do open mat, for the rest of the day. That, I think, would help a lot of people. And like I said, I have been seeing the trend, although it's not very many, where they're open on Saturdays, but not the whole day. Maybe it's just between noon and 1, it's going to have instruction, open mat from 1 to 3. I think that does help a lot because, you know, obviously during the week we got to make a living. Can't make a living, you can't pay your gym dues.
That's right.
So yeah, those are some of the reasons for not attending BJJ class. Brett, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, I think that particularly getting back to injuries and injury prevention, you know, once again, train smart, not necessarily harder. The best way to combat some of these injuries and afflictions that we talked about is really the best treatment is prevention. And so practice that good hygiene. That's number one. Try not to overtrain when you are training. And that's about all I can think of.
Try not to injure your training partners.
Yeah, that's right. I think a good rule of thumb is when you're rolling with other individuals, you know, slap that arm bar on them or put that choke on them like you would want that put on you.
Right.
You know, just remember that because you know, payback does come around. And once again, you and I spoke about before, it doesn't do you any good to slap this monster armbar on somebody and take them out of the game. That's one less teammate that you have to train with.
Right.
And so.
Right. Yeah. That's one of my views. Is personally when I train and I'll sink in the armbar, I won't yank on it. I'll just simulate finishing it because obviously you want to save that for competition when you're competing, whether it be Naga, Grappler's Quest. Yeah, sure, yank that arm, keep going until they tell you to stop. But when you're in training, I think that, you know, you sink the triangle in, obviously you want to work your technique, but if you sink a triangle in and your opponent, you see they can't get out, maybe they're trying to muscle through it. Personally, I just let it go.
Yeah.
If they can't get out of it, it would only be a matter of time before they go out or they tap. So I just let it go, I give it to them. And I think that has a lot to do with keeping your training partners safe, because obviously you don't want to break their leg and then they can't train, because they are your training partners. You know, they're not your enemies, they're not your competition, they are your training partners. So I just think that if we lowered the intensity a little bit at times, I have seen guys that they go in and they start rolling 100 miles an hour and they start slapping on arm bars and they're yanking for dear life.
That's right. Well, and there has to be some type of incentive for the people that are rolling out there as far as, you know, being safe. And my instructor used to have a policy that if you hurt someone in the gym, you're out as long as they are.
Wow.
And I think that's a pretty fair and reasonable thing to do.
And going back to what we were talking about, injuries and BJJ, the bottom line is, guys and girls, be safe and look out for each other and the well-being of your training partners. In conclusion, whoever trains in BJJ, remember that injuries are a part of the game. There's almost no way to get around that, but we can minimize our downtime by being aware of your surroundings, go slow if you need to, and inform your jiu-jitsu coach if you are injured or if you cannot roll for whatever reason. I would like to take the time to thank our guest this week, Dr. Brett White, for his insight and knowledge of the topic BJJ and injuries. Thanks to the Jiu-Jitsu forums, it's there I get most topics from. Lastly, I would like to thank my training partners and coaches at ATTPSL. We have a great team with great Jiu-Jitsu fighters. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is your host and editor-in-chief signing off. Until next time, remember, fight hard, finish strong.